Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBerge. This is Connecting Faith. We're here to reconnect the eternal with the everyday and make those connections between the headline news and the mind of Christ that equip you to enter into the conversations that people are having in the world around us and where we can be ambassadors of Jesus Christ in every single one of those conversations. So we want to equip you to be thoroughly prepared, full of grace and truth, to enter into the conversations of the day. So how do we do that? How do we get God back into the conversation? Well, one of the things you'll hear me say from time to time on Connecting Faith is people don't need just another piece of our mind, but they do very much need the peace of the mind of Christ. So how do we give that to them? Those are the conversations we want to be having here on Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBerge. I am joined again today by a person who needs no introduction, and that's Neil Stavem.
Good day, Carmen. It's great to have you with us again, and we're so excited about this new, fresh rendition of Connecting Faith. And really, as you said, Carmen, it is about connecting the eternal with the everyday. And well, there's plenty of stuff going on every day that we need some help with. And I was just interested as you talked about, you know, entering conversations with grace and truth. It seems like we always probably don't get the balance right on that, do we, as Christians?
Well, I think we have gotten to the place, Neil, where a lot of us respond defensively. And I think we respond either defensively in terms of we think we are somehow being threatened and we don't necessarily have the information or the confidence to enter into those conversations. And so fear produces a response of defensiveness. And the other part of that is I think we imagine somehow that God needs defending. And, you know, God is God and God is sovereign and he's actually got this. And so I want to invite people to relax into the promises of God, relax into the character of God. We don't have to be defensive in our speech, even though every single day we need to be fully equipped to engage very actively in the spiritual warfare that's taking place in the world around us.
You know, I think probably some of us would say, well, I won't be offensive, but I won't engage at all because that's the best way to not be offensive. But that's not a stance that we can take, is it?
No, because that's also the best way to be ineffective. Hmm. So I don't want to be an ineffective Christian. I want to recognize my full identity as not only a person who is saved from sin and death and its power over me, but I want to be a person who's saved for. God didn't just save us from the powers of sin and death. He actually saved us for his kingdom advancement in this generation. And so, you know, part of our identity is that we are actively deployed as ambassadors into the kingdoms of this world. So we represent the king and we represent the kingdom principles of the kingdom of heaven. And we do so right here and right now in this generation. And, you know, God doesn't make any mistakes in terms of when he deploys one of his ambassadors into the kingdoms of this world. So you and I are alive today. We live where we live on purpose and for a purpose. And the question each one of us gets to answer every single day is, am I being faithful to the divine appointments that God has set? Whatever's on my personal calendar, am I engaging other people, and am I engaging the issues of the day, not only with the mind of Christ, but in the spirit of Christ? Because that's really why I'm here, and that's why every Christian is here, in order that we might be living demonstrations of the gospel to other people.
I want to talk about a few headlines in a moment, but I'm just curious, as we get to know you a little better, Carmen, was this something in terms of understanding that it's the difference between from and for that happened for you as a young person, or is it something that's developed over time, or was there a moment where you said, you know, I haven't been engaging, but I'm going to start now?
So I think, you know, I was privileged to grow up in a household where I had parents who were very engaged in what I would describe as community service. They were both professionals and they were both very interested in being sure that, you know, folks in our community who might have been on the edges of things found the help and the resources that they needed. And so I think that, you know, part of this grows out of watching my parents live as very engaged civic leaders. I would not describe them, and Mom, you're probably listening, so no hurt feelings here. I would not describe them as having been particularly motivated at that point out of a demonstration of Christ to the world. And so when I came into a saving relationship with God through Jesus Christ, through the ministry of Young Life, I became very aware not only of the salvation from, but also the sense of calling. And so God, doesn't just save us for himself. He saves us for his purpose or his mission. And so this concept of missional living or living on purpose and really desiring not just that things be different, but that I be a difference maker in the world on behalf of Christ. Yeah, I think that all of that was caught up in the way that I was introduced to Christ and his work for me and then in me by the power of the Holy Spirit.
I look forward to in the days ahead to getting more of a greater sense for all of us about God's calling for his purpose and his mission in our lives. One of the things I know that something we want to do at the beginning of each program is to look at the world in which we live and the day's headlines. And Carmen, there's something we're going to deal with a little bit in terms of parenting that is pretty challenging. A new legal category of wrongful birth. Well, that's pretty sobering. Say more.
Yeah, Neil. So this headline caught my attention because it is so disturbing. And the conversation that's being had in the article and in this legal case that's pending before a U.S. court is the question of whether or not a genetic testing company and or a hospital and or a midwife could be held responsible for the, quote, wrongful birth of a child who is determined by his or her parents to be defective, and that defect should have been should have been found out through genetic testing. And these parents actually say over and over and over again that they would have aborted this child. They would have ended this child's life had they known that he had these problems. And so when we look back to the conversation we had yesterday with Nancy Piercy, and we look forward to the conversations that we're going to be having in the coming days about how we bring the Christian worldview to bear on the issues of the day, I think these are the kinds of stories where the rubber meets the road. These are conversations that are being had in U.S. courtrooms. They are conversations that are being had in the context of medical appointments. They are not conversations that are being had often enough among Christians or inside the church. So I really feel like as Christians, we need to be on the forefront of conversations about medical technology, about genetic testing, about genetic advancements, because we need to be equipped. These are not just conversations that women can be having with their healthcare providers. These are conversations that pastors and youth leaders and family ministry people need to be prepared to have. Go ahead.
You know, I was going to say, there's not only issues of parents and choices about bringing children into the world, but it seems like the other side is increasingly affected where children are. The courts are determining that children don't have to, stay according to their parents' wishes. There's a story about transgender and parents being stripped of their rights. This is kind of an unsettling new court development.
Right. And so I think that this particular development is in Ohio, and here we have a teenager who is diagnosed as gender dysphoric. So we actually have a diagnosis here of an individual who is in conflict with their biological gender. We talked about this yesterday with Nancy Piercy as well. I encourage folks to go back and go to the myfaithradio.com website, and you can actually listen to yesterday's show where we had this conversation about the incredible alienation that people are experiencing when we describe them as transgender. Here's what's so challenging, Neil. That's not an actual thing, right? We use a word to describe something that is cosmologically impossible. We are made in the image of God, male and female, and for us to participate in a you know, really in a national delusion that says that men can have uteruses and, you know, and women, it's irrelevant that you are a woman, that that's not a relevant category. That doesn't even make sense to me as a person who sort of grew up with the feminist agenda in front of us all the time. So I think that the confusion in our culture about what it means to be human, about what it means to be male and female, about what it means to be in relationship with each other, and then what it means to parent the next generation of people as well. These are the kinds of conversations we want to be equipping folks to have here on Connecting Faith.
Well, and as our next guest will probably tell us, clearly we are in a fallen world. And how do we fight for faith in that fallen world?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be having a conversation with Dan DeWitt. He is the author of Life in the Wild, Fighting for Faith in a Fallen World. He's also a professor of apologetics and applied theology at Cedarville University. So don't miss this conversation with Dan DeWitt when we're right back on Connecting Faith.
You're listening to Connecting Faith with Carmen LeBurge. I'm Neil Staven, just sitting in to welcome Carmen onto the Faith Radio Network and our broadcast today, as Carmen is going to spend a little time talking with Dan DeWitt. Looking forward to learning about life in the wild, Carmen.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. So, Dan, welcome to Connecting Faith. Let me tell folks that the book is Life in the Wild, Fighting for Faith in a Fallen World. We want to welcome you here from your post at Cedarville University today.
Thank you so much, Carmen. Great to be with you.
Okay, so I wanted to start out because I know you well enough to sort of be sarcastic, but my listeners don't yet know me well enough to be able to do that. And so I was sort of going to tease you and say, hey, I don't really understand the book because, you know, the Christian life is all about peace and tranquility and nobody ever has any problems. And I don't really know what you're talking about, that the world is wild and I am yet not perfected. And yet I am supposed to be engaging in this world. So, let's just establish the need for a person to be equipped as a Christian to fight for faith in a fallen world. You just establish the need for that.
Well, I think that in our culture, the secular side of this certainly gets this wrong. And you have people that would go so far as to say, like a Richard Dawkins, that there at bottom there is no good or evil. It's just blind, pitiless indifference, that quote that apologists love to quote. Or Alex Rosenberg at Duke University, who says that moral distinctions are an illusion. And so when you look at the world and there's suffering and bad things, that's really just an illusion. There's no true good and there's no true bad. But on the other end of the spectrum, sadly, the religious get this wrong too. And they often say if you just love Jesus enough, you won't be sick. You won't experience financial problems. So I think just returning to the Bible and saying, what should we expect the world to look like if we take this book seriously is important for all of us. We have to remind ourselves that, yeah, the world's fallen and it's not going to be easy, even if you're a Christian.
Okay, so let's talk about that reality of not only the fallenness, but the reality of sort of like what it was supposed to be like. So establish for us, you know, God's design. Talk about Eden and what it was like before the fall.
Well, I think that we see in Eden, of course, it doesn't last very long at all, right? You know, we get two chapters of utopia here on Earth, and then the rest of it's just a hot mess, and Jesus essentially coming to do what Adam should have done in the first place. But what we see in Eden, I would define life this way. Life is living in God's presence with his provision. And I would define death as being exiled from God's presence and his provision. And so we see the humans, Adam and Eve, being fully human, loving God in body and in soul, with no guilt, with no shame, with no regrets, with no sin, obeying the words of God. And that's what we see in Eden. And that's also what we're going to see in the new creation. But all of that was lost by Genesis chapter 3.
Okay, I'm hoping that somebody who's listening is now tweeting out Dan's definition of life, God's presence with God's provision. and death as being exiled from God without his provision. I actually, Dan, that might be the most, that might be my takeaway. I think that is so simple, and it's so profound, and it's so easy to remember, and it's so true. We've been studying, we're doing the Gospel Project in my Sunday school class, and so we happen to be at the point of Joshua and all that goes on there, and so we just talked about Jericho this past Sunday, and the God's presence, the promise that he's going to be with them, I will be with you. And how true that becomes for us permanently in Jesus Christ by the power of the Holy Spirit, you know, that I am with you always. So let's talk about what it looks like then to live in the wildness of the current world, full of Christ, full of joy, full of hope. What does that look like?
Well, I've really come to appreciate Psalm 23 in so many ways, but particularly as I wrote this book, because I thought in a lot of ways, this is what it looks like. We have a shepherd who leads us beside green pastures and still waters and through the valley of the shadow of death where we're surrounded by enemies. And but his rod and his staff, they comfort us, they protect us, and we know that in the end that we will feast with him and that we will be filled with his joy and gladness and his loving kindness will follow us. And so I think that's a picture of what the whole Christian life looks like. There are good times, there are joys. There's times when we suffer, and good grief, I'm sure a lot of your listeners, maybe even right now, are suffering in all kinds of ways. And if they believe that being a Christian would prevent that, they might doubt the character of God. But if we take the Bible seriously, we see that bad things are going to happen to us. No one's going to be spared from that. But we have a shepherd who's with us, and we have a promise that he will lead us through the wild, and he will lead us out of the wild to new creation. And that's the hope that sustains us. You know, Paul says we grieve, but we don't grieve as those without hope. So we can't deny our grief and we can't deny our hope. We have to inform both of them by what the Bible tells us to expect in the world.
So I want to lift up a portion of chapter 4, because we've been talking about some of the challenges that parents face in the culture today, how scary it is to even bring kids into the world, the challenging conversations that are taking place. And so, friends, let me remind you that we're talking about life in the wild, and we're talking with the author Dan DeWitt. We actually have 5 copies of the book to give away. If folks are listening and they're thinking to themselves, wow, I could really use that resource, you can call us at 877-933-2484. That number is 877-933-2484. And grab a copy of Life in the Wild. So, Dan, in chapter 4 of the book, you talk about a parent's pain. And I feel like I just want to let you walk around in that, because I think that it sort of helps us all recognize that it's never been easy to be a parent, and violence and homicide and things that kids do that break parents' hearts has been true in every generation.
That's right. I think sometimes we get this sense when we hear sometimes even older Christians, but it doesn't have to be older Christians, but when we reflect on a time period that was better than it is now, kind of like a golden age, if we could just get back to the 50s where we all, you know, went to the sock hop and things were perfect and you didn't have the kind of issues that you have today. And you realize if you go back to listen to the music in the 50s, they were dealing with all the same things. And if we trace that all the way back to Genesis chapter 4, we find that in the very first chapter, once Adam and Eve are kicked out of the garden, the first story we're told is about Cain, Adam and Eve's first son, killing Abel, their second son. And you realize the third person who breathed air on our planet killed the fourth. And so there's never been a golden age outside the Garden of Eden, and we're fooling ourselves if we think that somehow we're going to get back to a golden period. What we have to look forward, we have something to look forward to, not a golden period to look back on. Now, in terms of a parent's pain, trying to understand what it means when God tells Eve that she's going to have greater pain in childbirth, I just have to think that part of that, if not a large part of it, is psychological. The outside of Eden is going to be rough, having children. And, of course, we get to Genesis 4 and we see that that's exactly what they experience.
Well, and as I was reading that, I was thinking to myself, when Mary, the mother of Jesus, is told, you know, in advance, a sword will pierce your own soul too.
That's right.
And you know, I think that in this time of year, as we are all journeying towards Jerusalem with Jesus, as we make this approach, you know, to the cross, you know, I am mindful that his mother was a part of that, and she watched those things take place. And so maybe a word of encouragement as a dad of you guys have four kids, I think.
That's right.
As a dad of four kids and as a professor to college students, maybe a little word of encouragement and hope to parents who are listening as they are actively equipping their kids for life in the wild today.
Well, I included in the book, I heard a Christian leader once say that a parent is never happier than their saddest child. That children have a way of kind of setting a regulator on your joys and sorrows in life. I think our hearts are so connected to them. I mean, it literally is like having your heart walk around exposed out in public, you know, where things can happen to them. And so I would just say this. I think that at the end of the day, we have to remind ourselves of the power of the gospel that was powerful enough to save us, that is powerful enough to sustain us, that is the same gospel that is going to be at work in the lives of our children. And so I think sometimes parents, Christian parents, will try to entirely safeguard their children, and they kind of treat the gospel a bit like a family heirloom, that we wrap it in bubble wrap and put it up in the attic, and one day we could pass it on to future generations. And I would just say we need to return to a confidence that the gospel is big enough, it's not intimidated or overshadowed by any rival truth claim. And at the end of the day, our only hope is the story of Jesus that's contained in the gospel. So teach the gospel to your kids and then trust God that the gospel would be powerful for them like it has been for you.
Well, and when you say teach the gospel, and when you make reference to the gospel, I think you're talking there about something that is bigger than just that which can be reduced to a napkin theology. Not that we don't need a napkin theology and a plan for salvation, but when you use the term gospel, you're talking about something really big. And when we come back from our break here that we got to take in just a minute, I want you to really unpack the gospel. When you use the term gospel and you talk about it being big, and one of my favorite lines is when you talk about it being, I've lost my place. You talk about being big enough to make sense of sinkholes and shark bites. We're going to talk about those sinkholes and shark bites when we come back, some of the headline news of the day, and bring this worldview to bear. All right, friends, this is Connecting Faith. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Dan DeWitt. We'll be right back.
It's great to have you tuned in to Connecting Faith with Carmen LaBerge. I'm Neil Statham, sitting in as we launch this new program. And Carmen, a gifted communicator. She's a writer, speaker, and Christian radio talk show host. And talking today with Dan DeWitt. We're learning how to fight for faith in a fallen world. And, boy, this is something we really need, Carmen.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Neil. So, Dan, to continue our conversation, I want to pause briefly on the concept of fighting for faith in a fallen world. But first, I want to let you unpack the concept, this giant concept of the gospel. So I think it's often reduced down to, you know, I'm all good with God because I'm right with Jesus. And so can you expand it to its appropriate breadth and scope?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, I'll try. You know, that's a large scale. That's a big task. But that's what I'm seeking to do. And I think as all Christians should, which is not only to look at the gospel, but to see the world through the gospel. And so I wrote another book a few years back called Jesus or Nothing, and I was using the term gospel in the same way that we're talking about it. And I had one person critique that approach, and they said the gospel just means the atonement. It's just the atonement of Jesus. To which my response is, I can't talk about the gospel without talking about the God who created the world, who has a design for the world. I can't talk about the gospel without talking about how we've deviated from God's design. I can't talk about the gospel without pointing to the future when God's going to make all things new. So in that sense, the gospel encapsulates the entire Bible. And if that's the case, then it explains at least in large categories the world that we live in. So I think gospel is centered on Jesus, but it's big enough to explain everything, as you said before the break, from sinkholes to shark attacks.
All right. So my husband, who is out with a tree crew right now, I guarantee you is listening to this on his Faith Radio app on his phone, and he is pounding the steering wheel, and he is praising God because this the gospel that's big enough to encompass everything is the only gospel that's big enough, right? And so it is a cosmology. Mm-hmm. It is a worldview. I find myself every time even I use the term or the phrase Christian worldview or someone else does, I find myself wanting to say, hey, maybe we could start talking about a gospel worldview. The gospel isn't, mm-hmm. as you say, just something that we look at, but it is the lens through which we look at everything and we experience the world. So, friends, let me offer folks who are listening an opportunity to call and get the book. So we've got graciously available to us today from the publisher. We've got five copies of Life in the Wild, Fighting for Faith in a Fallen World by Professor Dan DeWitt of Cedarville University. You can call 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484 and grab one of these copies. It's a great book. So Dan, go ahead and pick up where we were and run with it.
Well, my students laugh at me because I can't give a lecture without a C.S. Lewis quote at some point. But there are two of my favorites, Chesterton and Lewis, quotes from them that come to mind. And Chesterton said something once to the effect of that talking about Christianity could mean talking about the cross or about anything else. Because as a Christian, there's nothing, you know, that we might discuss that is not going to have some referent point to the God who is there and who's not silent. And then the Lewis quote that I love, in terms of thinking about the gospel in a way that explains everything, his great quote at the end of his essay is Theology Poetry, where he says, I believe in Christianity as I believe the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. And for me, the gospel makes sense of who God is, it makes sense of who I am, and it makes sense of the headlines that we read every day.
Oh, well, amen. So let's have that conversation. Let's try to make a little bit of sense of the headlines that we're reading today. So I read two articles in the New York Times in the past week about new apps that are now out there on the market. And so anytime that, you know, I'm talking with a college professor, I'm very aware that students are living in a very different digital universe than the ones that those of us, you know, a generation older than them, even understand. So I have some apps on my phone, but I don't have like secret apps behind those apps, and I don't have, apps that disappear, and I don't have secret account apps. And I know that those are all parts of the world that our college students are engaged in. So these two new apps I found particularly disturbing. One of them is all about facilitating instant legal consent for the hookup culture. And the other app is about the ability to – creates the ability, literally puts it in your hands, to produce fake videos in order that you might, you know, turn around and use those in very negative ways in the lives of other people. So can you just – yeah. So when we talk about the headline news and we talk about the wild we're now living in, walk with us into the wildness of social media and what it looks like to fight for the faith in those environments.
Well, I said there's no golden period, you know, outside of Eden, but things do seem to have a certain way of looking more and more challenging. Although the same basic lie is behind all of them, has God not truly said that the serpent tempted Eve with? And I think that what we have to do as parents is to always be informed by Genesis 3 that our children are living in a fallen world. They're living in fallen bodies, even if they are redeemed. They have Their bodies don't always know that, you know, so they're going to have desires and impulses that are going to take them away from God's design for their life in ways that are going to really leave all kinds of scars and damage and pain and lead them to do things perhaps that will be painful to others. And so we really need to be prudent about what technology we give our children. We need to be prudent about ways that we hold them accountable, you know. So I would just say, regardless of what the apps are, that parents have to be really cautious of just handing them a smartphone with no filtering, with no accountability, because if we understand that they're fallen, that could lead to all kinds of bad things that we're going to regret and they're going to pay the cost for.
So I have a teenager in my house who has a dumb phone. And she refers to her dumb phone periodically when I send her a text message with an emoji that she can't see. And the other day she made the observation that someone who she knows has a smartphone, and her comment was, "But she's still a dumb kid." And so I think that students recognize about one another that there are some things for which they are prepared, and other things that's too much to put in their hands. It's too much power. It's too much temptation.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's too many choices. And so I think your word prudence on the parenting side is essential. And then how do we teach our children to be discerning? How do we teach them to discern the truth?
Well, I think that one of it just assumes that the conversations about these things are happening. And obviously, as parents, if we're not taking the initiative, you know, it's unlikely that there are going to be other people who are going to be having those conversations for us. And so I think that we need to talk honestly. So my oldest kids are 11, so they're just at that stage where we're having some pretty frank conversations with them. So to say even very specific things like, if someone ever shows you their phone, because my children don't even have a dumb phone yet, but the dumb phone is great, Carmen, because I'm going to use that with my kids. And I'm just going to tell them, well, Carmen gave her kids dumb phones, and that's what you're going to get too. So, but to say things like, if someone pulls their phone out and shows you a picture of someone without clothing on, I want you to look away. I don't want you to look at it, and I want you to come and tell me that. And so giving them the invitation to have those conversations, I think, is crucial. And then telling them why it's wrong. And so much of this does go back to Genesis chapter 3. Before the fall, Adam and Eve had a very simple life. There was one tree they couldn't eat from. And now what we have on outside of Eden is a world that is often morally confusing, where we take that which is good and we call it evil, and we take that which is evil and we call it good. And so we constantly have to be in conversation with our kids and give them the opportunity to talk to us when they're faced with real-world temptations.
All right, friends, and if you want a copy of Life in the Wild, Fighting for Faith in a Fallen World by Dan DeWitt, you can give us a call here in the studio, 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Dan, thank you. Thank you so much for what you do every day. Before we let you go, give people a little insight. Maybe for those families who right now, you know, their kids are moving very quickly towards high school graduation. College is ahead of them. They hear horror stories about higher education in America today. Equip parents, I know it's impossible to do this in a couple of minutes, but
sure.
Equip parents for the conversations that need to be had between now and when that graduating senior leaves their home and heads to college.
Well, I would say for Christian parents who have, you know, Christian children who are getting ready to graduate, I think it'd be better for them to either go to a completely secular school where they know exactly what they're getting, or a conservative Christian school, but to go to a liberal Christian school where the authority of the Bible is going to be on one hand kind of accepted and with the other hand rejected, I think it'd be better to kind of have very clear, a clear environment. And so that would be one, my advice. And then two, pick a college with a church in mind. So I just had a long talk with a parent who is sending their kid to a school in Indianapolis because there's a church there that loves the gospel, loves college students, and the pastor is committed to discipling college students. And that was the final thing that sealed the deal for them. So think church as much as you think what campus is the best. Think what campus has a church where I know my young person can get plugged in.
Oh, I love that. See, I would not have thought of that second option, or that way of approaching it, to choose a college with a church in mind. I have some friends who he spent his whole career in the NFL, and every time they got traded to another team, what they did was they went to the new city and they found a church that they wanted to, you know, invest in and be in for as long as God had them there, and then they looked for a house. And so I think that's what I hear you saying. I think I hear you saying, find a church that's really loving on college kids, and it's going to be okay for your kid to go to college at that, you know, in that community, because you're going to know that the family of faith has your kid and has your back. I love that. I just love that. All right. Hey, Dan DeWitt from Cedarville University. The book is Life in the Wild, Fighting for Faith in a Fallen World. Thank you for being with us today on Connecting Faith.
Thanks, Carmen.
This is Connecting Faith with Carmen LeBurge. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in with Carmen. She had a great conversation just these past few minutes with Dan DeWitt, his book called Life in the Wild. We have 5 copies to give away, and we'll do that drawing here top of the hour. So if you want to in on that, you can give us a call at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Get in for the Life in the Wild. The book, the subtitle is Fighting for Faith in a Fallen World. And Carmen, I know that that is a passion for all the topics that we deal with here in the program, is that we would actually learn how to live out our faith in a fallen world.
Neil, that's exactly right. And I just learned something. It's a drawing for the books. So that must mean we get more than 5 people who call.
Yes. Or at this point, everyone who calls is a winner. How about that?
So well, it's good to know, right?
Yes,
so
it
I'm
is.
Fresh.
Yes.
I'm fresh at this.
Sure.
I should have been pitching that as a drawing. So there you go. I'm learning. Okay. So I completely agree with you. I feel like everything that we're doing, not just here on the show, but pretty much across the Faith Radio platform, like what we're trying to do is to help people live as gospel-centric people, word-centered people, kingdom-advancing people in every arena of life. And so if the conversation is about education or vocation or the family or parenting or school or healthcare or on and on and on. It could be about North Korea. The conversation is still going to be about the gospel. And how is it that I, as a Christian living in 21st century America, am going to enter into the conversations that are happening today in my small spheres of influence? How is it that I am going to be sure that I have rightly represented God in those conversations? And Neil, the only way that I can be certain that I've rightly represented God is if, I have saturated my life so thoroughly with the Word of God that when life squeezes me, shark bites and sinkholes, as Dan DeWitt says, when life squeezes me, what comes out is the Word of God. Like that's the kind of person I want to be out there in the world, because life is going to squeeze us. And we're all full of something. And what we're full of is what's going to come out when we get squeezed. And so I think that's my encouragement to folks today. Like, there's no question that we're called to live life in the wild of our current generation, and the wildness of our current secular culture. But how do we live as people who are set apart, who are holy, who are seeking to be more and more conformed to the image of who Christ is, moment by moment, in cooperation with the Holy Spirit? Like, how are we actively pursuing that? Because if we're not actively pursuing it, then slowly but surely we're going to become more like the world instead of becoming more like Christ.
I like the word that he used as he was talking about, getting the conversations with our kids, to be prudent. And I think that's one of those good old, we were talking about some old words yesterday, but that's a good one as well, that it doesn't mean sort of pull back and sort of hoard or There's an engagement there, isn't it, to the idea of being prudent?
Yeah, absolutely. Neil, have you ever read The Little Pilgrim's Progress?
I have, yes.
The kids. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So we're currently reading that in the evenings with our kids. And Prudence actually made an appearance last night. Like, you know, there she is. She's on the scene. And one of the kids said, "What is prudence?" And it gave us an opportunity to actually talk about what does that word mean. And, you know, and one of the other kids said, "Well, you know, you don't want to be a prude."
Hmm.
So there you go. There is the way the world has taken something that is good and something that is true, like prudence, and warped it just enough to make it a mockery. And so, you know, how do we help our kids understand that, you know, to be holy, to walk into the reality of living as people who are worthy of the calling to which we've been called in Christ, that doesn't mean that we become holier than thou people who nobody else can relate to. And to be people of prudence who have wise decision making based on truth doesn't mean that we are prudes, like even though the world may call us that. And so I think that rehabilitating our own language and making ourselves familiar again with some traditional words that may be lost in the culture today might also be a good exercise for Christians.
Yeah, I like that. I also, as you were talking about, you know, being discerning, and he talked about, you know, that we need to have these conversations, but there's a sense of invitation that, you know, I think sometimes as parents we think, well, it's a lecture, but no, it's an invitation to dialogue, to discuss. And I'm sure you deal with that as a parent all the time. How do we want to have the conversations, but it doesn't mean lecture.
Right. And I think that's so hard. Like kids instantly think they're in trouble. And the word discipline tends to not be a particularly popular word, right? So when we talk about cultivating self-discipline, we actually start with a conversation about the mind and what does it look like for, you know, every thought to become captive to Jesus Christ under his lordship. Because if I can get there in my thought life, I have a whole lot better chance of getting there in the life of the flesh. And so in terms of discipline and then self-discipline, you know, inviting people to think about what they're thinking about. So if you ask somebody, well, what are you thinking about? And they say nothing. You have that's a great entry point because now you can give them something to think about. Christians ought to constantly be thinking about what we're thinking about. Because if I'm not thinking about what I'm thinking about, then chances are my mind has wandered to something that is less than what God would have me to be thinking about. And so, you know, when Dan's encouraging us to be invitational in our conversations with our kids, and when he's encouraging us as parents to be prudent and then to be teaching discretion with our children, you know, he's using big discipleship concepts there, all of which are a part of what I would describe as discipline. And discipline's just, I mean, it's like the word submission, Neil. Nobody really wants to lift these words up today.
You're right. I was, as you were talking about, thinking about what we're thinking about, what are some ways in which we do that? Some takeaways? Is it a matter of just, is it about memorizing God's word? Because you know, life gets busy. We got a lot of things coming through our heads and our minds and in our days.
Right. So for me, anytime I catch myself thinking about something that is just really clearly not aligned with what God would have me thinking about at the moment, you know, that's sort of my moment during which I say to the Lord, all right, go in there and take that thought captive because I realize I shouldn't be thinking about that. More often than not, Neil, my thinking about what I'm thinking about at this stage of life is, am I thinking about this in the way that I should be thinking about it? So it's not the subject matter so much anymore as am I viewing this the way God views it? Am I seeing this through the gospel's lens? Am I recognizing the dignity of this other person with whom I am now engaged in a conversation? Am I only seeing all the things about them or smelling all the things about them that are off-putting? Or am I really recognizing This is a person made in the image of God, and they have the full dignity of their humanity, even if right now they're living in circumstances that are certainly less than what God intends for his children. And so it's more now about how I'm thinking about what I'm thinking about, having pretty well gotten beyond the not thinking about what I'm not supposed to be thinking about stage of the discipleship game.
It's certainly easy to, because we, as we said yesterday, Nancy Piercy, I mean, we live in a culture that has essentially completely devalued the human person. And so we can get caught up in that.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things that Dan addresses in his book as well. And that's that the culture that we live in, really the constant threat that we're under is the threat to our dignity as human beings. And so if I can, you know, if I can get you thinking that you're just mud that came together by the chance encounter of time and matter and energy, if I can get you to embrace the idea that you're nothing but an accident of mud, then I've already reduced you in terms of the conversation about what you're worth and whether or not you could have a purpose, and certainly whether or not you could have an eternal destiny. So it's this conversation about whether or not the cosmos, the universe, is personal or impersonal. And that's where we get right back to the gospel. The gospel reveals to us that the universe is personal, and reveals to us that the person in charge of that universe is a God of grace and a God of glory, a God who is holy, merciful, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love. The God who is the gospel in the person of Jesus Christ is also the God who is the gospel at creation and the God who is the gospel at the redemption of all things.
It's interesting, just in the last, you know, yesterday and today, I've already just reminded myself again that we need to go back to Genesis 1 to understand. If we want to understand the gospel today, we need to go back to the beginning.
Yeah, well, you know, when Dan talked about the golden age, I tend to talk about the good old days. Like any time anybody says, oh, you know, back in the good old days, I just literally stop them in conversation, Neil. And I'm like, whoa, when was that? Because, you know, when we refer to the good old days, we're normally only talking about a time period that was relatively good for a relatively few people. And we happen to be in the group that was experiencing the relative good for the relative few. And so I think it's dangerous language for us to use because it points back to a period of history where our view of reality was so narrow and so small that we really weren't paying attention to what was happening to other people. And so you got to go all the way back to Genesis 1 if you want to really go back to the good old days, you know, to the days that were objectively good, where goodness, beauty, and truth, which are the three transcendental virtues, were the reigning reality of the day.
You can find out more about it in Dan DeWitt's book, Life in the Wild, Fighting for Faith in a Fallen World. We've got a drawing for the copies, and we'll do that here in just a couple of minutes. You can still get in at 877-933-2484. Carmen, looking forward to tomorrow as we talk with John Stonestreet. We hear him on Breakpoint every day, and looking forward to this conversation.
All right. He's one of my favorite conversation partners, and I'll just warn people in advance. He uses words that I have to write down and look up after the
okay.
conversation.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. I mean, I think, you know, part of what Connecting Faith and Faith Radio is all about is that we learn something, and then, of course, the idea is that we apply it, and hopefully, I think, as we go along day in, day out, that there'll be application. I know that's a passion for you as well.
Absolutely.
Well, a reminder, if you want to hear part of today's program again, we post the interviews on the website. You go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you'll find the interviews archived podcast there, and you can listen to them again. You can pass them on to a friend, and hope that you will find a great way to listen. Maybe you're listening online. Say welcome to you. The Faith Radio Network app is available for you and your friends, and if you're new to Faith Radio, of course, you can always check out the new listener pack, and we'll send that to you. You can sign up for that at myfaithradio.com. Carmen, looking forward to tomorrow's edition of Connecting Faith.
Hey, thanks, Neil, and people can catch me at carmen@myfaithradio.com.
It's carmen@myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.